Pod Candy!
A podcast about cults, crimes, and killers.
Imagine thinking you found the love of your life, a handsome cardiologist, kind, attentive, and deeply connected to your world. Only to find out nearly a decade later, he never existed. That's what happened to Kirat Asih, a radio host from London who was drawn into one of the most elaborate and disturbing catfishing schemes ever uncovered in the UK.
Despite the emotional and psychological devastation, no criminal charges have been filed. The story raises big questions about digital abuse, coercive control, and the limits of the law. And it's all unraveled in the documentary Sweet Bobby on Netflix.
I'm going to give the origin of the term catfishing. The idea of a catfish being placed with cod to keep them lively during shipping is a metaphor for deception. The catfish, in this case, was the false identity used to attract and deceive the target.
Outside my window.
Sweet Bobby. Okay, Bobby. I love how she said Bobby.
Bobby.
So, Jory, this was your pick, and it was so fascinating. I didn't know what to expect. I had no idea, no preconceived information or knowledge about this idea, about this case.
Yes, I found it last year. I'm so glad we're talking about it now because nobody that I know has seen this. Like, I've suggested to friends, to family, watch Sweet Bobby. Nobody has seen it, so I'm so glad we're talking about it today. But yes, so there is the crux of this story is it's a huge spoiler. So I think we should suggest that if people want to listen to our podcast maybe after they've actually watched Sweet Bobby, would probably be best. So now we're going to dive into it. So please, let's reveal the big elephant in the room, Stacey.
So her cousin, Simran, was the person catfishing Kirat. And
her
for
own
9
cousin.
Years,
her own cousin.
I have the chills thinking about it. For 9 years, this poor woman was seeking, it's very important in the culture, in Indian culture, marriage and family and all these, and her parents are lovely and they just wanted her to be happy. And she was in a long-term relationship before. And then this thing starts happening. This thing starts creeping in where she sees Bobby at a bar because Bobby exists.
This is Kirat. This is Kirat. So the story Kirat. Is about, yeah, so it's Kirat who is giving away the best years of her life because of this man who is a real person who she has seen in a club after they've been kind of talking back and forth for 3 months. So it all seems realistic, only to find out that for 9 years she has been communicating with her cousin, Simran, who creates 64 other profiles and people. I mean, this is a full time. I mean, think about this, Stacey. You run a theater show. We were just talking, like, we have a lot of stuff going on in our lives,
yes.
Right? Like,
you're all the time.
A mom, you've got your business. I have to work. I've got a foster dog. We're just one fine time to sleep with the phone on all night long to maybe text in the middle of the night something to your beloved that you really have never had a personal conversation with ever.
Ever.
Instead of messaging, Bobby and I have stopped using Skype.
Yes, you do. Many times have I caught you out.
But because he was in witness protection, we weren't allowed to have a video call. It was just too risky. Even though Bobby couldn't speak, he would communicate just by making some kind of noise, whether it was a tap, a grunt, or whatever it was. And we'd just fall asleep with the line open.
Good morning, sweetheart. We've been Skyping all night. I stayed with you all night. That was so lovely.
Did she, Dory, ever talk to her on the phone? Or was it all through text? Talk to him on the phone?
No, I remember it was the soft voice. There was a time before Bobby went into the
witness protection
program, and that's why he couldn't ever meet with her. And then he had this devastating, I mean, there's just so much. I know we're just like throwing shit out there.
No, we're like throwing shit
people
out.
People are following along. They're probably not. You got to watch this. But then he's in the hospital. But the only way that he, because he had this devastating injury, the only way that they could communicate was really through Facebook Messenger, or at maybe some point there's been some whispering from Bobby. So you, even the mother talked to Bobby. It's just this quiet whisper.
It's whispering.
Yes, it's like, hello, Stacy. I've never met you before, but you're the love of my life. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
It's been 9 years. We've never met.
So we're not making fun of this. This is not a joke. We're just, it's just fascinating. And I love this woman, Kirit. I think she is very cool. She's gorgeous. Gorgeous. But it's so sad, Dory, because she's chasing this dream of this idea that she becomes, it's almost cult-like in that she gets indoctrinated, she gets convinced, and it just keeps escalating and escalating and escalating. More calls, she's in touch with Bobby's cousin, she knows who Bobby's wife is, he has a baby with this woman who he says he's divorcing, but he's been with her the whole time because he's a real person that doesn't have anything to do with her. It was all fabricated by her cousin who made up a story about some guy's life.
When I think back to the club in Brighton, when I bumped into Bobby, which was the real Bobby, that is a sliding doors moment. But there's so many moments like that. I find out when Bobby's brother, JJ, added me on Facebook, it was actually Simran. Simran had dated JJ in real life, but they had broken up. And the version of JJ that I'd been introduced to was fake. Starting from there, every character connected to JJ, Bobby, everybody is all Simran.
I think you touched on the point, though, that, you know, I am a single woman who is older and I never had children. And I think, like, you touched on this with, like, you know, the Indian culture, a lot of people do get, like, married early. They get set up with people that maybe they don't know. But mm-hmm. you mentioned, you know, she had a relationship before this whole Bobby thing, but mm-hmm. she literally gave up her, like, you know, quote unquote, birthing years for these 9 years where you don't know, is she ever going to have a family now because of her cousin who at 17 years old started this ruse. And, you know, once Dr. John gets out here, or Dr. John, as we like to say, I have so mm-hmm. many questions for him.
Oh, so many.
Because they all lead to Simran. Like, how could somebody do that? Just in general, but then to a family member that you have a good relationship with,
yes.
that you love. This John is gonna, some psycho level shit going on.
Yeah, and I think it escalated. I think it got worse, but I'm going to talk to Dr. John about this, or we're going to talk to him. I can't wait to ask him. She seems to have borderline personality disorder. I don't know if she's, Simran. Maybe she has some sort of, you know, besides having a personality disorder, Simran. Because it must have been very, very well constructed, because Kirat was like hanging on. I mean, she was hanging on to this. She never, and even when her parents said to her, you know, are you sure? She was adamant. This is the man. And I have to say, her parents were lovely. And so they almost seemed progressive in the fact that they weren't trying to set her up. They weren't trying to make it a match like they usually do. And well, I shouldn't say usually, just in some, you know, Indian culture, they do sometimes have a match. In a lot of cultures that happens. And sometimes it's for good, because the family knows the family. I mean, I'm not saying it's the right way to fall in love, but the family knows the family. They know where they're from. They know what they have. They know all these things. They have a nice boy. You know what I mean?
Oh, my mother fixed me up with a couple winners back in the day. I wish that I was in the culture that they really knew what they were doing.
Exactly. So, our parents, you know, but, you know, my, I have so much to say about that. But anyway, back to Bobby. Sweet, exactly.
Marriage is important. I've always said, Kira, look, you have to get married. And every parent wishes to be a grandparent, you know.
She had quite a number of proposals as soon as she came back from uni, and she always declined.
It's not that we haven't helped. It's for her to make up her mind.
I want to make sure she's happy. But if the girl does not get married, I think you're looked down upon. And I think she feels pressure from the community, from the friends, from the families, when they think, oh my God, why is she still not married?
The issue with Simran is like, she's got to be sociopathic and borderline.
Yeah, what does she get out of it?
Like, she's even psychopathic. A rush of, I think it's similar to when people are making a phony phone call or, you know, steal something. It's like a rush of adrenaline of this thing I'm doing. And oh my God, I'm getting so good at it. I think Simran believed it. I think there was a part of Simran that somehow thought she was doing something good. I mean,
that is true, because in the doc, mm-hmm. they do say that I think that she and Kirith had like the a separate, you know, discussion, obviously, personally after all this happened. Mm-hmm. And I think that she had told her, I thought, you know, like I was kind of helping you because, you know, you had probably had the relationship before that you knew wasn't going to work. And then, but there, that's delusion to me. That is complete and utter delusion.
Yes.
To create. I mean, Kira was like online talking to made up people about Bobby constantly and having intimate moments.
That was what I was going to catch.
Yes.
Her cousin.
Her cousin, not Bobby. And that's disgusting.
And you know, she said, you know, when in the doc, they said, you know, did you have any, you know, intimate conversation? And she kind of, you know, she was like, I don't want to say it. You know, so you get the impression that there was a lot of that about a lot of, you know, maybe, you know, texting, you know,
phone sex. Yeah.
Texting, mm-hmm. sex, phone sex. And, that's twisted. That's another level to me that she allowed, like her cousin was sitting on the phone or texting her back and like playing with her with that. I mean, that's just so abusive. And so it's so manipulative and like it's deceitful deception. It's betrayal. It's awful. And then Kirat's left with this like sick. Now I'm sure she feels so. This is the thing with cognitive dissonance. When you realize you've done something for a long period of time that, you know, and that you didn't understand or come to terms with until you actually did. And then when you do, you look back and you go, God damn it, what's wrong with me? Like, what kind of psychological damage has this done?
Well, and I think the sad thing is like, you know, when she confronts Bobby at his house, mm-hmm. with his wife, Sanj, and the baby there.
Beautiful girl, by the way. God, beautiful. He's gorgeous.
He's gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Hello. Hello, sweet. Yeah. Hello, Bobby.
Yeah, sweet
You're
Bobby.
Very attractive gentleman.
I'm in my 50s.
Yeah, come on over to America. But
yeah, come
I
on.
Think like when you know, when the sad thing is like when it all came to light and the fact that the police were very interested in Bobby's side, because we have to say, like, Bobby was also shysted during this whole thing.
Yeah.
Simran was using his and his wife's personal and the baby's personal photos for this crazy ruse, but that the police were so interested in the Bobby side and really like wanted to help him with his charges, but poor Kira, there's nothing that they would do for her. She had to take matters into her own hands to bring this some type of legality.
Ugh. It is so, like, I have the chills the whole time we're talking, because I'm thinking about, you know, a topic of mine that is regret is always something that I think about, and I don't like to have regret. And I always talk to my students about, like, regret. Like, you took a path, you chose a path, not this path, but if you didn't choose this path, you wouldn't know it was on this path. So you got to go to this path and just trust that path. And don't think about what could have happened. You got to go to that path. And there's this poor woman, Kirit, who goes on this path and keeps going. It's like being in an abusive marriage. You're like, well, I guess I'll just keep it going and I'll wait until the kids are older. And I feel like it's 9 years from your 30s to your 40s, or, you know, somewhere in that area is just mind.
You said it's
awful.
You had said it before. It's very cult-like because
she isolated her. She quit her job. I mean, she was crying all the time. I mean, it's awful.
Yeah. All of her time was centered around not only Bobby, but also around all of these, you know, quote unquote characters that Simran created. Because we have to say, too, this all is plausible because Simran, the cousin, dated Bobby's brother. So
which is probably
is that mm-hmm. connection of reality. So why wouldn't this be realistic? But like we're saying, it became cult-like because her whole life was insulated by all these people that then Simran created. Like,
that didn't exist.
A group of four of us that chat about Bobby once he went into witness protection program. And now we have three of us that are in another Facebook group that we always chat about, you know, when he had that terrible accident. Or now we have a couple others that we talk about when, you know, he's getting divorced from Sanj. And now, did he get back together? I mean, it's just, it's mind-boggling.
Ultimately, I find 60 profiles.
60.
She used all these different guises to control me and hold my fears against me.
The other thing that was so depressing and sad to me is that this was not Kirat's baby. This was Bobby's baby. But she was willing, Bobby and Sanja's baby, which a whole story was made up about them from Simran, but they were always married. This baby, and they picked out clothes for the baby and got her a gift, got the baby a gift, him a gift. And then they had a picture. Of course, they didn't show his face. Thank God. But he had the outfit on and she thought, oh, he's wearing what I bought.
In picture sent to me, Bobby's son was wearing clothes that we'd picked together. Unbeknown at the time to me, those baby photos already existed on the real Bobby's Facebook page. Somehow she had reverse engineered it to lead me to pick those clothes. There's even been times when I've been with Simran and she'd be fiddling on her smartwatch and I would get a message from Bobby. Now I realize that she was messaging me as Bobby while with me.
this woman, Simran, or this child, or whatever she was when she started, I cannot, to have a mind like that, to be able to create false identities, stories, you are so good at being bad.
It's so funny that you say that, because I was just thinking, like, with all these like cults and all these like masterminds from true crime, like if they just use their evil for good, like they're brilliant people. This woman is a digital mastermind.
Yeah, yeah.
Creative writing mastermind. She's ruined her, Simran, she's ruined her whole life.
Right. I knew you were talking about Simran, because I don't even think she was in college yet. I mean, she was pretty young. It's really hard to keep those things consistent when you're lying a lot and making things up. So you have to, you yourself have to be aware of the consistency of the lies. Okay. You know what, Dory?
Who are we bringing in?
We're bringing in the most important therapist on the planet. Dr. John Mayer.
The doctor is in. The, doctor
is in.
As always, I've been chomping at the bit.
I know you're chomping in.
I'm chomping at the bit to get in here.
Anyway. All right, John, what do you think of what we've been talking about?
Oh, my God. Well, first of all, as always, you both have excellent instincts and empathy with what's going on here. One of the things, you know, from the start here is I'd love to see a real picture of this Simran. Because I just have a theory that, you know, they put an actor's picture in the documentary. And you got a feeling she's not that cute of a girl. Everybody else in this documentary is so, I mean, they're beautiful people from A to Z. The parents are even just, you know, very attractive older parents. But anyway, I wanted to see Simran because I just had a theory that this is a girl. What else does she have going on in her life?
That's the thing that is so confounding. She had a relationship. They talked to like some, you know, school friends, like that she, was not like somebody who kept a
relationship ended, which just gives you a clue, you know, what's going on with her that she couldn't hold this relationship. That's certainly, I mean, that's the low hanging fruit here is that the Simran has nothing going on in her life that she's got to be obsessed with ruining her cousin's life, who, like you both said, and they made a good case in the documentary, she loved her cousin, you know, but her cousin became a plaything for her. But I also was thinking that since you have to take this in cultural context. I know, and not only in some patients that I've treated, many patients I've treated, but I have some personal friends who are Sikhs. They're of the religion, the Indian religion of Sikhs. And this whole thing of the pressure to get married, I don't think there's another cultural entity that I've ever witnessed that has such pressure that marriage and children are, you know, it's everything. I think the parents even said in the documentary that that's everything. And Kirat constantly said at the beginning when this first started, I want so badly to get married and have children. You know, we have to look at it in this cultural context of how much pressure there is for this. So when you wonder why Kirat got so deeply involved and was hanging on to this, it was because of that family and cultural and religious pressure to make this work.
Marriage is a big deal in our culture. From a very young age, I dreamed of getting married and having a family early. That's what matters to me more than anything else. There's a picture of me as I think I was two. My auntie dressed me up in my mom's wedding outfit. That's their hopes and dreams as well.
Let's just talk about Simran's personality. I mean, I mentioned borderline, I mentioned sociopathic. I want to hear from you, John, a doctor. What is Simran's personality disorder? What is her issue?
All right.
What is her psychological problem?
That brings up a good note for all of our episodes. Per the ethics in my field, I can't diagnose her over the media. But I can give some hints and some ideas. And there's just speculation, everyone in the audience. Mm-hmm. This is not an official diagnosis because that would be unethical. But
correct.
You both hit it on the head. You both threw out some terms, which I think are certainly in the ballpark of what Simran is dealing with. Is she sociopathic? Yeah, probably. I underline probably. Borderline? You know, maybe. That's a very, by the way, serious mental illness. It's not just something to throw out.
Oh no, did I throw out something bad? I just
it's fine. I mean, I think it's in some again, of the characteristics the of what could be going on with this young lady. But I also think you have, again, going into this larger context of these people, the other thing that really hit me was they're, first of all, like we've said many times, they're beautiful people. They're also very wealthy people. I started to say that I know people in the Sikh community, and I also know I have a friend who was from not only the Sikh community, the Sikh culture, religion, but also from Africa. And these are very wealthy Indian people. And look at all the leisure time that these people have. And none of us have the time to be catfishing somebody to the extent that Simran did to Kirat, and Kirat to spend the time obsessed with this Bobby. So that's one thing you have to keep in mind with these people. Back to Simran, is she mentally disturbed? Probably. Again, everyone, probably. I'm not diagnosing. But also, look at the thrills that a kid would get out of this. I have to share a personal story. When I was probably in middle school, I had a friend whose mother worked for the phone company. And so she got unlimited phone time.
You're such a boomer.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Just kidding.
And we would
keep going.
We would get a kick out of making crank phone calls, you know, to people. We would spend hours making crank phone calls, delivering pizzas to the neighbor next door and seeing five pizzas delivered. And maybe I shouldn't be saying this on a broadcast. We even called up, well before I had the idea of becoming a psychologist, we even called up a psychiatric hospital and tried to get my friend committed. We were like, you know, 11 years old, 12 years old.
That's so funny. That's so ironic.
Right. But look at the similarities to the Simran. Is she getting incredible kicks out of this? And you also hit on something, Stacey. I think it was you who talked about the sexuality, you know, that Kirat didn't want to talk about. But I really, my ears perked up and I wondered, I could just picture Simran saying all these sexual conversations with Kirat and kind of getting off on it, you know. And maybe there was more of that went on than we know of. And it would be interesting if, you know, we knew what the nature of that was. So
I really wanted, because I can only imagine what it was to keep her for 9 years. There's got to be, you know, like, it's just gross that this woman did this to Kira. You know, I mean, it's just gross to put her in that position. And well, then she still felt okay.
No, we haven't talked about, and I agree with you, I have to preface what I'm saying here by saying I agree with you when you talked about Kirat and she's an admirable woman and, you know, she's going after this and not, you know, I totally agree. But let's talk about her a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Doctor, about
what happened to her? Kirat. What's wrong?
Because how does one keep moving on after having this 9 year chunk of life invested and be embarrassed by it as well? I mean, there has to be embarrassment too.
Oh, absolutely. Especially to family members. You know, oh, when are we going to meet Bob? Well, that came up a lot. When are we going to meet Bobby? Can you bring Bobby to this get together, etc.?
Bobby made me feel loved. And given the obstacles, things were going well. But despite this,
There's only so much you can live a relationship online. You have to be with each other. But there's always a reason why he can't come. It was really frustrating.
But do you know how much I want to be with you? Do you know how much I want to look after you?
I was very disappointed as well for him not turning up, and I was trying to console Kirat every time, but then she wouldn't discuss her feelings openly with me, thinking that I will be upset and distressed about all this.
I'd do anything.
The stress of the situation is too much for him, and things start to feel different between us. Because of the stroke, Bobby's health was up and down, and his mental health was fragile. He started to lean on me quite a lot.
Yeah, let's take a look at Kirat and say, what would make a person hang in there 10 years? And I think, again, we have to look at the cultural context of the, you know, what I talked about before, about the pressures to have a person, to get married, etc. But also we have to look at the Sikh religion, is that the Sikh religion values honesty and values and truthfulness. So there's an element that Kirat fell into, thinking, well, he's a Sikh, and, you know, we all are honest and we're truthful to each other, and so I can trust him. I can believe, you know, that everything he's saying. So that's another thing we have to take a look at.
Kirat met Bobby in a club, so she knew that this person was a real person.
Yeah.
And that, if you can speak more about that, there was a level of reality to it for her, probably because she actually met him, but that never really, they never spoke, they never talked about it on their exchanges with her.
Yeah. She tried to talk to him at the bar. She's like, remember me? I've been talking to you. He's like, well, I don't know who you are. You know what I mean?
What you're getting at, I don't want to be too scientific here, but what you're getting at, Dory, is the concept of intermittent reinforcement. You know, that she met him. You're right. One of the very first things that happened was she actually met the real Bobby. She saw him. And again, the guy's a stunning guy. If you see the pictures of the club they're in, it looked like he was almost taller than everybody else, you know. So he just stood out. How could you not, like a magnet, be attracted to this stunning guy who's in this club and almost like it was almost like John Travolta in the middle of, the dance club.
Staying Alive?
Yes.
Another boomer comment.
Yeah.
I mean, such a boomer.
Your eyes would just go there. She gets that. She gets that reinforcement. She gets that little piece of candy, and is attracted to this guy. That was a hook. You're exactly right, Dory. And then Simran was absolutely brilliant at mind manipulation to give her little pieces and little reinforcement along the way and hooked her in. But it still brings me back to, and I'm sorry, Kirat, because I hope you are listening to our broadcast as well. What would drive you to keep hanging on that long? Cut bait, you know. There are so many.
It's one of my questions. Cut bait, literally, like a fish.
Yeah, that's why I said.
Well, that was funny.
Right. There was a lot of that hopeful reassurance that, come on, like, I am coming into town, and then they'd never meet even after because we have to remember there were years of the witness protection program, so he really couldn't be out and about. So that was a brilliant thing from Simran, with also the terrible injury that, you know, the faux injury that he also succumbed to, where they had a photo of him in the hospital with all the tubes. So maybe there was that, it there was that like plausible hope of, you know, well, I'm in the witness protection program, so I'm here, I'm going to come in, I'm going to see you, but I can't right now. I have other things going on. Like, is that maybe something, Dr. John, that like you kind of, like for Curette, she kind of thought like, this is hope. That's why she keeps going and going with it.
Yeah. Let me get back to what I said in terms of the science of the brain, is that this intermittent reinforcement is so powerful. It's the most powerful thing that hooks people onto bad habits, lifestyle things that people do is intermittent reinforcement. So, but for 10 years, it still to me was very unusual that she hung in so long.
Well, and also he was married for a little bit of it, then divorced. She was willing to stick it, like she was his friend, but she wasn't dating anybody. That's another thing. It's like she wasn't even with him.
Yeah.
And then when he had a baby, then she was willing. See, she was giving so much of herself away to nothing. She was willing to raise another person's baby for a fake person. I mean,
and again, it goes to the brilliant manipulation of Simran, because, you know, that's what I thought about with him getting married. As you watch it and you don't know what the twist is yet, you're going, okay, he's married. And she's still hanging in there like, I love you and I'm behind you. Even though you're getting married to Sanji and such, and then she has a child, and I'm still here for you, etc., etc. Rather than bye bye, you know, at the end of the documentary, when she finally goes, okay, this is enough. I'm just gonna go to his house and knock on the door. I said to myself, yeah, lady, you should have done that, you know, 10 years ago.
Can I share something with you guys?
Yes.
So, you know, it's really interesting that during this whole process that we've been having together, specifically together, I have recovered old memories of things of manipulation that I've been in. I was catfished once by a guy I met. So I met a guy named Sean on a, you know, I'm not telling you his last name, just a guy at Club Med. I mean, I met him at Club Med. We had no physical relationship. He liked me, but he was whacked. But we were having this sort of emotional relationship when we got home on the phone. And then he told me he was coming to visit. And then he didn't. And then he told me again. And then he didn't. And then he said he would come to my turnabout. I didn't have another date. He said he'd come. And he didn't. And I felt so taken. I felt that I was being manipulated. I mean, now that I'm looking back then, I was like, well, then I cut it off, and I, at least it only lasted 3 months.
You see that intermittent reinforcement. You know, he gave you little pieces of candy, you know, and you were
right.
You were chomping on it. Oh, okay, this is good.
I was hanging on to an idea of this guy, and I'm not even like, I never even kissed him. Like, it was just, he was giving me candy. She was giving, and we're not trying to point that out, it's just funny. He was giving me all this, you're right, reinforcement, like, I love you, I'm coming, I'm gonna come visit. It's just now I can't, I gotta go to, my school is requiring me to stay. Oh, now I can't come. And it fizzled away and ended. Exactly. He's now married with kids. He's okay.
This is exactly what happened in the, and Curette's you know, is that she would get those tidbits and those little crumbs. And I want to throw out a term, and it's a good time to do it. You know, it was almost Rasputin-like, you know, that she was mesmerized and just controlled. And it's almost like crazy spiritual way by this whole thing. And again, I hate to throw brickbats at Simran, but the manipulation techniques were brilliant for a 17-year-old kid that, you know, and that's another reason why it kept going with Simran. Is because this had to be absolutely a kick for that girl, you know, absolutely getting her jollies off the fact that I got my cousin so twisted and so in control, and I could probably have her do anything. That is powerful.
I think with Curette, there is a lot of social pressure, and like we were talking about, you had said to Dr. John that, you know, the family pressure, all of that. I think that there is that, all of that, that encompasses wanting to believe that something is real or something is more when it's really not.
Exactly. And
do you think there was a part of Kirat who knew it wasn't real, even deep down, but was afraid to end it in case it might not have been?
I didn't get that impression at all. She truly believed that this was...
She was hook, line, and sinker, as they say.
And he loved me, and we're a couple.
Yeah.
Also have to fit in, by the way, and maybe both of you give you some perspective. I've been in this field long enough, and as you both know, one of my claims to fame is dealing and treating teenagers, and especially, you know, kids that act out and stuff. And when the internet first exploded, it's actually kind of an ironic story. I had this one very shy, very introverted teenage patient who all of a sudden in a session says, I have a girlfriend. I got to tell you about my girlfriend. I'm just so hooked on this girl. I think you know where this story is going. For session after session, I'm giving him advice and how to, you know, be a boyfriend to a girlfriend because he was so socially awkward and shy. And I'm giving, you know, my A stuff on how to be a cool dude. And all of a sudden, after about 10 or so sessions of dealing with this, I somehow found out, or I asked him the question, have you ever saw this girl or met this girl? and it was all over the internet. And she lived in like in Canada and he was in Chicago or something like that. And it was so, you're right. Dory's face right now, everyone, is just so sad looking. It was, absolutely.
I get it. I think this happens, not the catfishing, but I think that like extreme hope of wanting it to be true and wanting it to be good, I think it happens more often than not.
It's happening a lot. Oh. That's why I bring up that story. And if I was Kirat's therapist, which by the way, nobody was in therapy here. That's interesting.
Yeah. What's going on there?
I would have slapped her in the head and said, you know, wake up. You got to meet this guy. Don't be falling for these excuses and, you know, get her out of this thing.
And it's not a physical slapper in therapy, correct? Right. Like you don't get physical.
Well, I've heard stories. There are times, you know, that I may have, but that's for another day.
So, John, doctor, the idea of catfishing, like I just kind of want to wrap this up with the idea of catfishing again, going back to the original idea. Why do people do that? Why do people deceive other people and get pleasure out of people believing them? Like, what is that coming from? I would feel so guilty. And, you know, Simran, like she confessed it at the end. She was like, it was all me. It's like, what? It was all easy to do. That was that easy? It was all me? It's like, you know, you were always able to go back to Kansas. You just didn't know. It just really upset me that it was like, that's all it took was her to say that. And then Kira was like, like back. It's like she was like, you know, flew against the wall because it's just so shocking.
Simran gets out of the car. I've opened the door and she says to me, I don't think I should come in. And she's got quite a serious face. I'm like, why? She looks at me and she says, it was all me. I'm like, what do you mean it was all me? She says, I'm Bobby. I think slowly I'm registering she means that she's been pretending to be Bobby. But I can't quite understand. And I was like, calling out names. What about Sanj? What about Yash? What about Rajveer? What about Kiran? What about so-and-so? She's like, it's all me. It was me. It was me. I was all of them. I suddenly question, who have I been sleeping on the phone with for the last 3 years?
She says it was me. Violated. I want to be sick. And I'm just screaming at her like, why? I just kept screaming, why? Why did you do it? And she's like, she's ruined my whole life. She's stolen the best years of my life with me. And all she could say was that I ruined my own life. No expression, nothing.
Let me ask you a question that, you know, what's going on with this Cimarron? What does she get out of it? Well, I think you have to look at her. And again, everyone, this is not a diagnosis, but I think you have to look at her as a very undeveloped human being. Probably
kind of like Ed Gein.
Childlike.
Childlike, like Ed Gein. They don't mature past a certain age.
Exactly. And she got great thrills out of doing this. And in her mind, yeah, okay, I did this. I'm done now. Okay, everything's fine. Everything's, good. But she's not realizing the damage that, which I want to make a point before we run out of time on our podcast here, is that one of the things that I took away from this, you know, I deal with killers and criminals who do horrible things to people, but I have to agree with Curate at the end of the documentary. There's got to be some laws or something enacted which emphasize the cruelty and the damage that you do to somebody's life by this kind of thing, this catfishing thing about manipulating people. I think it's probably, this is a terrible thing to say, but I think it's probably more heinous to do something like this than to just shoot somebody and kill them and you're done. This is years of torture you put person in, and there's nothing we can do to a person like Cimarron to give her any consequences for what she did. I mean, mentally ill, immature, childlike, whatever she is, she needs some consequences for what she has done to ruin these people's lives. And it's people.
She's so entitled. Like, she could just go away and be fine. Like, it's such an entitled way to think.
It was me. It's all done. Everybody should be just fine.
Yeah. Everybody's fine. Like, if it was 1 month, okay. Or even 1 year. But 9 years of this woman's life all day. And then being abusive with having her. Where are you going? I'm going to the bathroom. She had to, like, leave the phone on. Sorry, I know this is the end, but the more I think about it, the more I get upset.
The devastating emotional, psychological damage that this does to an individual is just enormous. We're seeing this in the news right now with, you know, these people, coming, up with, you know, I was abused by a clergyman when I was a child and it scarred me the rest of my life. We just had a report in the media here in the Chicago area about this individual that was abused by a Catholic priest, and the rest of his life he was into drugs, and he suffered tremendously, and he died at 43 because of incident that happened when he was a child. And here we have 10 years of psychological torture that Curate has to live with.
Catfishing is so popular. I mean, they have shows on it, like just dedicated, like on MTV. There's literally like, it's almost like a pop culture thing to catfish. So the Manti Te'o incident, the Notre Dame football player, that kind of brought catfishing maybe to the forefront as well. But you had asked that question, Stacey, about just like catfishing and, you know, like what do you get? I mean, or what you get out of it or why. But it is very popular because you can hide via the internet. You can do these. This is a crime to another person. And like we see with Cimarron, there isn't a lot of consequence to it.
And it doesn't seem like there's been any consequence. And I got to throw in there, I, as a doctor, every year have to take HIPAA training. to keep my license. And one of the sections that is strongly talked about is internet fraud. And they talk about catfishing, because another way that catfishing is used is to infiltrate companies, get into people's credit cards, et cetera, et cetera. So I think an even bigger crime we've seen here is this damage that has been done. It's like psychological murder. Maybe that's
it might be worse. I mean, it might be psychological torture. They say sometimes is worse than physical torture.
Oh, it absolutely is.
And that's what I was going to say. I'm so sorry that I forgot. And also, not, you know, I know we have to wrap up, but I do have a friend who's in his 60s who was abused by a priest when he was young. And he revealed that to me about a year ago, talked to me about it when we became really close. And he said his whole life has been, he never even talked about it until he was in his 30s. He carried it around with him. He's still single. He's never been with anybody. And it causes so much, it breaks you, it changes you, especially if it's done when you're a kid. But even more so as an adult, when you're going through times when you're going through transitional times or anything like that, you know, when you get out of being in college and then you have to be an adult, there's that weird transition where you could be recruited into an MLM and recruited into a cult because you're looking for something. And it's just that vulnerability that people have.
I've treated so many patients that have, you know, been abused either, you know, by a clergy member or a parent or a family member. And it is a torture that really pervades your life until you get therapy and you can put it away and you can move on with your life. There is cures for it. I mean, we can help people that go through these things. And I hope Kirat is getting some help and she can heal herself.
You know what? I'm going to have her baby. I don't have ovaries or fallopian tubes, but I do have a uterus. So if she wants to find a way,
oh my gosh,
to get some
this
sperm,
is getting off the rails.
Okay. This was great. Dory, great pick. What a great podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to join us next time when we'll be diving into another cult or crime. Our theme music is written and performed by Midnight Current. Check out more of their work on SoundCloud. For more about us and to catch up on every episode of Pod Candy, head over to podcandypodcast.com. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.
Pod Candy!